we watch sitcoms like Friends, where they have this third place where all of them go and meet a lot of people and have a great time. Third places don't exist anymore. It stops us from meeting people.
Oh, what an interesting concept that you look at that and you think, wow, what kind of world is that? And yes, partly because of technology, but also if your dollar was sound and you had purchasing power that was not stolen from you, you'd be able to say, hey, let's just go to this cool place. I want to go somewhere fun and try new things and meet up with your friends. And fiat takes that from you.
This is part of the reason why hustle culture is also so big.
It's something that we don't think about. Welcome back to the Bitcoin Nova. Today, I have Nikki here with me, and I am so excited that she started her own podcast called the Orange Guild Podcast. How's that going for you?
It's been going really good, actually. I've been going for about a month, and I think I've just been so shocked at like how well it's been received by the Bitcoin community. I mean, you guys are seriously some of the best people out there.
That's amazing. I'm so glad that you're finding support with the Bitcoin community. It can be a scary thing, right? Were you pretty scared to do it or?
Yeah. I mean, as always, putting yourself out there on the internet is like terrifying, right? Especially, you know, being young and being in college, I thought a lot about how it would be received by my friends because, you know, Bitcoin, and I know Bitcoin isn't crypto, but to the outside, it's kind of seen as crypto. So it doesn't really have the best, reputation amongst young people. So I mean, it was terrifying at first, but I'm glad I did it because this is a really, really important thing. And I think more people need to be talking about it.
I'm so glad. And, you know, just seeing young people like you actually trying to spread the word and realizing how important it is very important, you know, and it's nice that even though you've, you know, a lot of young people just kind of, they're afraid of being different, you know, they want to fit in. So it's nice that you're actually doing your own thing because you know how important this thing is and to try to teach more people about it. And I love that you have your own show because, you know, every podcast out there that's talking about this important shift in the world is reaching a different audience, you know, so you being your age and, you know, with different set of peers, your voice can reach different people. So I'm so proud of you for doing this and for taking the leap and for just getting over that fear because it is hard. And even if you just kind of do it because you're passionate about it, you're not doing it for the reasons of, I want to be a YouTuber. I want to, you know, grow this channel to be what. You're just thinking, I'm doing something important. I'm talking to people, learning about it. You don't have to know everything about it. You actually learn a lot from your guests as well. But just being able to just get out there and just get started, you know, get started because you love it, you know, so that's really just what's important.
Yeah, I mean, that's been my favorite part. I think I love doing interviews, especially. So, you know, having people on and getting to talk to a bunch of super cool people and then going and talking to people on their shows, it's just the best part. I love meeting people.
How many other shows have you been on?
This is actually my second, so I'm really, really excited. I haven't had much practice, you know, going and talking about myself. So as much as I can get in, I love to do it.
I'm so happy. So how old are you?
I'm 19.
19. That's incredible. So you live in Australia, right?
I do. Yeah.
Okay. And how did this all start for you? Did you, cause I know your dad's a Bitcoiner. He's part of our community on X. So how did this whole journey begin for you?
I think the first time I heard about it was obviously back in 2017, but I was like 11 years old at the time. So all I really remember was, you know, all the price hype. So people were like, Bitcoin's up 20%. And there were all these headlines about just how crazy it was and how people were becoming millionaires overnight. And it felt like a lottery at first. It wasn't really something serious. And at the time, I wasn't thinking about money either, right? It related to nothing that was actually real and important in my life. So fast forward to about 2022, I was writing my IB extended essay on the 2008 financial crisis. So, you know, looking at Lehman Brothers and the subprime mortgages and all the government bailouts. I mean, it was awful what just happened. And I came across Bitcoin then, but I looked at it a lot as a technology. So I studied the blockchain, SHA-256, I even looked into like RSA encryption and decentralized systems. I mean, it was awesome. So this Bitcoin itself, the technology, was the coolest distributed system that I had at the time. And I was thinking of studying computer science as well. So it really just clicked. I mean, I love looking at algorithms. So, I mean, it was awesome. But it wasn't until, I think, 2025, January, when my dad made me watch What's the Problem, Joe Bryan. And I had like the awesome opportunity to talk to him last week. And I mean, that video was just incredible. I mean, it was actually like shattered the bubble that was around me. I, you know, connected the dots. I was like, oh, this is why my coffee here in Australia costs me $9 or $10, depending where I go. And 10 Australian is like 7 USD, which is a lot to pay for a flat white. So fantastic. I mean, it wasn't
until saw that documentary or that movie, and then you just decided like it just clicked for you. And that's when you just thought, I need to teach more people about this.
Basically, I think when I watched it, I started to understand why I was feeling things get more and more expensive. And after moving to college, because college here in Australia is very different in the US, we live in our own apartments, we do our own grocery shopping, do our own cooking, cleaning, all of that. It's not as, I think, community forward as it is in the US. So because of that, it felt like I was like thrown into adulthood way earlier than I was expecting to be. So when I started, you know, going grocery shopping and seeing my grocery bills were like 100 Australian dollars, which, you know, that's like 70 US, like that's a lot to pay for just one like 19-year-old girl per week and a half. It's just essentials. I mean, like eggs, Greek yogurt, vegetables, like it's all normal stuff. So then I think I also started noticing price increase from year after year. So my rent has already gone up twice in the 2 years that I've been here. And it's gone up by a substantial amount as well. I mean, there's no way that I can see someone who's here living on a minimum wage, working a day job, and then going to uni, cannot see them affording a place in the city that's actually close to campus. So just to put that in perspective. So when I watched the video, I connected the dots, and my dad was like, study Bitcoin. So he, you know, gave me the Bitcoin standard. He gave me Broken Money, you know, Price of Tomorrow. And I, you know, read the Bitcoin standard and I was like, oh, wow. Okay. Then I started reading Broken Money, and I'm still reading Broken Money because I got these books back in like July. So there's a bit of a time jump there. And I mean, there's a reason all these books are the classics, right? It's just they really, really connect the dots. And yeah, so that's how I discovered Bitcoin. I mean, I know that was a long answer, but...
No, that's a great answer. I mean, that really just... I heard Joe Bryan actually, I think, for the first time on... Maybe it was Paula from the Bitcoin Edge. And then I did think I saw him on yours, and I saved it. I bookmarked it because I think he's an incredible guest. He actually reminds me of... I don't know if I told him this, but I messaged Paula after I saw him on her show, but he reminds me of this astrophysicist named Brian Cox, but he sounds just like him. But he has this really easy way of speaking and like a calm way of speaking. And he kind of has almost like a Jeff Booth-esque quality to his, you know, to his demeanor, you know? So it's very easy to, you know, they explain it in such a way and it's not aggressive or, you know, it's just... They have a good way of pulling you in, you know, so I think he's incredible. So that's great that you got to interview someone like him already. How many guests have you had so far?
I think I haven't released this many, but I think I've recorded about 10 interviews so far.
That's awesome. Is that hard to do with being in school?
I think I've been balancing it okay, but, you know, the semester I'm about 8 weeks in, so it hasn't started ramping up quite yet. I have exams in about a month, so I'm kind of thinking about how I'm going to juggle that in a month's time.
What are you going to
computer
school
science.
For? Okay. Oh, that's why you're so interested in the protocol.
Yeah, basically.
Okay. At least you're not going into something completely unrelated. So this, you know, the field you're going into, the field you're studying relates perfectly to this type of world, you know, that we're moving into. So at least it's something that you know, something you're passionate about, you know, you're learning something that could actually take you different directions in it. So that's really great. But
yeah,
I think 100%. That you, how do you find, like, do you have friends on, or do you have people that you've been telling about Bitcoin via? Have you had anybody on your show yet and just kind of talked about it with them? Or do you have guests from, you know, online that you found through the communities, or how have you found your guests so far?
So far, I think I've just been reaching out to people that kind of have their own podcasts. So one of the first guests that I had was Robin Sayre, and I just like sent him a DM and I was like, hey, do you want to come on? And he was like, yeah, absolutely. And he was like the third interview that I did. So that was pretty cool. And I found that, you know, everyone's been really open and really responsive, which is what I love about the Bitcoin community. Again, I mean, no one's really here for clout. No one's really here to get famous or to make money. It's all about creating a better future for ourselves and for the generations that will come after us. So I think that, you know, that's just the coolest part of it. And, you know, there's awesome people out here like yourself, which is awesome shows and awesome podcasts.
Thank you. I mean, thank you so much. That's really, really sweet. And I think when we heard that you were doing it, everybody was just, it was a wave of excitement. You know, somebody young is doing it, you know, and it's really, we're all happy for each other when we start to do this. And it's true. I mean, having people on your show that you think, you know, are well known or have a big platform, and then them just saying, yeah, I'll be on, you know, I love talking about Bitcoin, and just knowing that. I mean, were you nervous? Because I know when I had my first couple of guests, I was really nervous, you know. So, and Robin Sayre is amazing. He's so easy to talk to, and I love like conversing with him.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. He's a yapper, so I think that was a saving grace for when I interviewed him, because I was kind of like, okay, get your questions sorted. Just make sure you're listening to what he's saying and you're able to ask follow-up questions. And then the best thing about guests is when they're knowledgeable, they kind of take the lead on the interviews, and really it's an opportunity for you to learn. So that's why doing interviews are my favorite, because I learn more just sitting down for an hour with somebody than I do, you know, researching for like 3 to 4 hours for my solo episodes. And you know, having guests like the likes of Joe Bryan, I mean, those are profound conversations. I've listened to my own interview with him like 3 or 4 times now, and every single time I have a new perspective. There's a new thing that I learned. I mean, it's just these guys are awesome.
I love that you go back and watch it multiple times, because it shows you how much it resonates just with you and how much you're learning, because it really is journaling all of your questions and all this insight into a place where you could just access it whenever you want. And then anyone in the future that comes across it can learn something just like you're learning. So it's just an online journal for knowledge, you know, so you're just expanding that journal and you're able to reference it yourself. So that's really nice to hear that you go back and actually you enjoy it. You know, it's like you could tell how much you enjoy it by doing that. With Microseed, you can engrave your entire seed phrase onto a durable titanium washer. It's the ultimate backup. Simple, indestructible, giving you true peace of mind and knowing your seed phrase is secured for life. Use my link in the description to get your kit. Satoshis. So many new styles and fully customizable. Use my referral link in the description or in the comments for 10% off your order. The Bitcoin Advisor for multi-sig custody solutions to store your Bitcoin, inheritance planning, and peace of mind.
Thank you. I mean, that's exactly what Orange Peel is here for, right? I think when I was getting into Bitcoin in just like middle of this year, I was looking for, you know, resources online, and there are a ton of really, really great beginner videos out there, but there wasn't something that was almost like vlogging someone's journey, like recording it, documenting it. So I thought, hey, why not just do this? Why not just ask a bunch of questions, because that way I get to meet people and I get to actually talk to a bunch of really cool people and just hit the record button on the conversations that I already wanted to have and then just post it. And I didn't expect it to, you know, get anywhere at all, but I just hit 200 yesterday and it was like the biggest thing in the world. I called my dad and I was like, we're at 200.
That's so cool. I love it. It is, you know, because it's like, even I think when you first start, you kind of think, you know, I'm happy if I get anyone to watch this, if it changes one person's mind, you know, it's like, you're just, that's what you're there for, to kind of reach anybody you can, you know, so every little milestone is, you're so grateful for it. And I love seeing how excited you are when you reach a milestone like that. I think I was one of your very earliest subscribers, I have to say. I think as soon as I saw that you had it, I don't want to say I was within the top five, but I was pretty early. So I love subscribing.
No, I think you definitely were.
Thank you. Yeah.
You've supported so much and I really, really appreciate it. So thank you.
Oh, you're welcome. It makes me happy. You know, it makes me happy when I see any new person starting out with a podcast, especially in our community and the Bitcoin Army, and just seeing that it was a member, like somebody's daughter. I was like, that is the coolest thing ever. You know, we haven't had one of our kids, you know, yet anybody do this. So, but it's just exciting. It's exciting to see that you feel as a parent, you did it. Like, you did a great job. You know, your kid is finally, you know, they got this, you know, and they see how important it is. So it's a proud moment for your dads. I love it. Are you just kind of trying to see who you can get at this point?
So I think I started off the get-go because I just started reaching out to everyone. I mean, I like pretty much 2 weeks in, I went and I sent an email to Jeff Booth. I was like, hey, little podcast, do you want to come on? And, you know, shockingly, he said yes. So I'm going to meet him in like end of November. So I'm like kind of stressing and like prepping for that. But I mean, it's just been awesome. I thought, you know, when I was starting, just whoever wants to come on, whoever I see, just sent them a DM, and it's been well received so far.
Just knowing that my age, when I had some people on that I thought were possibly going to be intimidating, but then just seeing how humble they are and how willing they are to share information and reach new audiences. I think I'm so amazed by a 19-year-old to be able to have that sort of composure, to be able to just speak to all different names in the space, some of the biggest names out there. So that's just, I can't get over the fact that you're 19 and you're doing this. So, you know, a lot of young kids, I just think I don't know, maybe you guys are stronger than people think you are. You know, I think you guys do put up with a lot of hardship, you know, like I think from a lot of older generations, they sort of think that the Gen Z and younger people are lazy or something, but it's just, I think they feel it without knowing it. I think you guys, like your generation, I'm sure you probably see this with a lot of your peers. It's like you don't want to work that hard because you know that you can't really get anywhere with it. So you just kind of and you guys have been put through so much, you know, it's just like, we've seen the decline of the dollar over the years, but you guys are just entering as adults into the world and seeing how year after year it's getting worse. And I think that's what makes people lazy. You don't want to work hard, and it makes you feel like that slave mindset.
So one of the biggest things that I'm seeing amongst my peers that kind of relates to this is just the fact that the job market is so terrible. I mean, so my class, we graduated high school in 2023, and most of us will graduate in 2027. Here in Australia, we'll graduate in 2026. But regardless of that, when we were graduating high school, job market was booming, especially, you know, computer science and tech. A lot of people were hiring. We saw that during COVID and a little bit after COVID. And a lot of people were like, okay, I'm going to study computer science because, you know, this is an opportunity to make a lot of money and get a good, stable job and, you know, get the future that we want to have, which that's drifting so far into our financial future, but that's an issue that we can talk about later. So now with, you know, the introduction of AI and a lot of new technologies, and you're seeing a lot of these layoffs happen almost every Amazon, Microsoft, you name it, all the big FANG companies are just laying people off left, right, and center. We're kind of like, hey, what the heck? I mean, we were promised this really great job market. That's why we went into this field. That's why we, you know, went to college. That's why we're paying so much money just in tuition. And I mean, it's literally being taken away from us. And I think that's the biggest problem with Gen Z. We feel like our future, our financial future especially, is being totally stolen from us. And there's nothing that we can do about it.
There's no security there. You're right. I think that you feel that, you know, like the way people think about the crypto industry, like lumping Bitcoin together with crypto and thinking of it as a gambling sort of thing. You always hear that word rug pull in crypto, but it's actually the government and the system rug pulling you. You know, you feel like you're trying to do what they're telling you and they're just pulling it out from under and you're just constantly falling. And you know, I thought about that for myself or my kids. They're not ready to go to college yet. Not really close, but I think about that because how do you guide your kids as a parent when you know that the job market is shifting so rapidly with AI and technology? It's hard to even be able to guide your kids, you know, so they're sitting there trying to navigate this new world alone and to figure out what they're going to do that's going to be relevant in the next couple of years. It's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, I owe everything to my parents. I mean, they are doing their level best, and they've done just an incredible job at, I think, preparing me and now preparing my little brother, who is in his junior year, so he's getting ready to go to college. And I mean, they're the reason I got into Bitcoin in the first place. And I think growing up, we've always been a household that's placed a lot of emphasis on being financially literate and knowing about money. So when I was, you know, in my junior year of high school, my parents handed me a few books. They handed me The Psychology of Money and Quit Like a Millionaire by Christy Chen and Little Book of Common Sense Investing. So all these little books that, yeah, you know, we're just talking about money and what it is and how to make it work for you and, you know, how important it is to your life. So when they discovered Bitcoin, it just absolutely changed the game for my brother and I. And yeah.
You guys are so lucky.
I'm very, very grateful.
Once you find out what it is and once you realize what your parents have been doing and why they thought it was so important, and when you get it, you're like, thank God you you know about this, because you realize how not very many people in the world know about this. And it's still very early. And, you know, your parents were one of those. So it's like you have this admiration, I feel. Is that how you kind of look at them? That how did they know? Or, you know, probably because of the financial literacy that they were, you know, they were expecting of you guys and they wanted to have for themselves. But it's almost like an impossible task when the financial game is a big, you know, a big magic trick.
Yeah, I mean, 100%. And honestly, sometimes it feels like they're psychic or something and they're just able to tell the future, because I never saw a fix to what was going on with the dollar, to what was happening in government. And then, you know, they came across Bitcoin and they were like, hey, I know it sounds, you know, scary. I know it sounds like it's fake internet money and it's like gambling and, you know, crypto bros and finance bros and all these negative stereotypes, but just, you know, give it a shot. Read one book, watch a few podcasts, and then if you don't believe in it, you don't believe in it. So they've always been very, very open about us finding our own way and then just them encouraging it.
Right. Yeah, because I think if they were to keep forcing it at you, you would be like, okay, you know, it would kind of push you away further. But just, I don't know anybody who's actually taken the time to understand Bitcoin that's actually said, I just don't like this. If you actually take any time, you get drawn in, you know, you actually get pulled into wanting to find out more. So I think the people that just haven't cared to do that is because they haven't really taken enough time to watch one full movie like you did with What's the Problem, you know? So if they watched one movie, you know, and then if you still don't get it, I think your priorities are a little bit, you know, screwed up, you know, because it's like once you see it and you don't, if you watch the same thing you did where you didn't get it, you just have to actually think like, where's their head at where they don't think this is a big deal? Like, do you feel that way where you're just amazed and surprised?
I think definitely, because I try to talk to my friends about it. I try not to orange pill them, because I know that that's really daunting and that's really scary, but just to ask them about their experience with money, because my friends were like 19, 20, 21. So we're at the age where we know about money and we're living on our own. And a lot of them here in Australia are international students as well. So they've moved really far from home. So we're basically adults with experiencing how much life can cost. And I asked them, I'm like, do you feel like, you know, you're getting less and less far every single day that passes by? Do you feel like your dollar is just not as powerful anymore? And they're like, yeah, I mean, they see the price of groceries grow from year to year. And, you know, there's shrinkflation, you know, you get like a bag of chips and it's like, it went from being like 75% full to now they're probably like 60% full. So all these little things, plus the student debt that a lot of them have taken on their heads, and just, I mean, everything. It's really, really bad. And so I ask them, you know, do you know why this is happening? And a lot of them are like, oh yeah, inflation. But then I ask them, okay, so what actually is inflation? And they're just like, prices going up. Why does that happen? They couldn't tell you. And a lot of them are econ students too. So yeah, those ones, they can tell you, but they love to argue that inflation is a good thing. And I mean, it's not even their fault, because I've taken econ classes too, and I'm taking econometrics right now. And we're literally taught that inflation is a good thing. I mean, it's absolutely just, it's so weird.
Yeah, we're being an interesting person. I think you would like to talk to James Lavish too, if you haven't reached out to him. Because James Lavish talks about it, like we discussed that too, about being in college and not learning about money. Mm-hmm. And he, I guess, like, I think they're sort of starting to, in some colleges in the U.S., have, you know, very here and there classes about Bitcoin. But he was saying that the system isn't incentivized to teach you about what money truly is. You know, it's, they want, so when he was going to learn about finance, it was more about, you know, loans and debt and stuff like that. And it's not about what money is, about going to work and spending your time working, and that's your time spent, right? But they don't teach you that it's a medium of exchange and what it all is. You know, it's just about how do you invest and where do you put it. And it's always the system, like he explains it, where the system is benefits from being the experts, telling you where to invest your money, collecting those fees, doing the things that they do to draw people in so that they can be the, you know, the people that know everything that can help you, because finance is so complicated. You know, so they make it this complicated thing where you need to trust a financial expert, but really there is no incentive in the current system to teach people these things in school. So that, I think everyone just has this idea, like I used to have, where you see the problem in the world, but you think that's the way the world is, though. It's rigged against us, or, you know, I guess I have to work harder, you know, to get ahead. And I talked to another Gen Zer who just explained it this way, where he just said the goalposts keep moving, just like that rug pull situation. So you keep thinking you're working harder. You keep thinking you're doing what you're supposed to, but you're never reaching, like, you don't feel like you're reaching a finish line, or you're never feeling that good about your situation. So it's, exactly. It's, and then, yeah, people just, I think, feel like they don't know that Bitcoin, there is an answer to this problem, and they just think that that's just the way the world works, you know, and either you work harder or you suffer. And I think that's all they think their two options are, but there is another option, and it's hard to get people to see that.
Exactly. A lot of people, they don't really know what the problem is as well. And there's a meme online where there's a whole thing about how a lot of girls especially will just be like, oh, why can't we just print more money to get us out of debt? And as much as I hate to say it, sometimes that's true, because sometimes it's just the fact that, you know, we're not educated about what inflation actually is and how does the value of the dollar go down. I mean, that's one of the questions that I had. I was like, well, if we print more, I mean, why exactly does it have to go down? I didn't get it. And, you know, then you take an econ class and you're like, okay, this is just the basics of supply and demand, right? Supply goes up, obviously prices are going to increase. So it just, I mean, it's really awful, just the mere lack of financial literacy that we grow up with, because we're not taught anything in school. And once you get into college, you're taught, you know, Keynesian economics, which is something that my dad loves to talk about. He's like, yeah, you're being taught all the wrong things. Like, don't even take an econ class. I'll give you a book and you can learn so much more. And I'm like, okay, Dad. All right. I get it. So it's a really, really scary world, and we aren't equipped for it.
Yeah. You know what? I'm sorry. I almost cut you off, because that's a very important thing you said. You aren't equipped for it. And it is rough. And it's like a parent's duty, right? When they have kids, like, it's your duty to see these kind of problems. And I mean, even if you don't care about for yourself, your kids have to grow up in this world, and they have to, by the time they figure it out, you know, it's kind of your job as a parent to be financially literate. And when you realize that the financial system is pretty much like a big rigged game, you know, you have to do the work to kind of do that for your kids. You know, it's just, I don't know. Everyone does it at their own pace, and, you know, when it's time for them. But, you know, when we see, I don't know if you notice, like, you're busy with the podcast, you're busy with school, but I'm sure you notice, like, the turmoil that's happening around the world. You know, that you hear random stories about even Nepal, you know, and about CBDCs. And I don't remember which country recently. I haven't even had a chance to look at any of the news myself, but I almost think that when you see these stories and you see these breakdowns in society, kind of, it just almost feels like more people in that case get orange pilled, because when they start to realize the level of control or the freedom that's taken from them or the hardship that they're enduring, when they finally experience those things, they have unnecessary reaction and they have to go learn it. You know, they have to learn it because there's no other choice at this point. So sometimes it's the terrible things you see that happen, I almost weirdly enough say or think to myself that that's more people that are going to find out the truth now, you know, because they're actually going to start asking questions.
Yeah, exactly. And the thing about Gen Z is that it's a very polarized generation. It's very, very, very divisive. And we've gotten to this ideology, and it doesn't matter what you believe, but of just utter intolerance for anyone who believes even just the slightest bit different to you. I mean, it's gone from, you know, oh, I disagree with you on this, I actually think it's like this, to be like, oh, you're a bad person.
Right.
I don't want to be friends with you. And that has created a lot of loneliness. That's created a lot of just fear for the future, because you struggle to find, you know, friends and people like you and even unlike you who you enjoy spending your time with. I'm a really firm believer in the fact that your friends should be different from you, and they should have different perspectives and, to an extent, different values, because that's how you learn about life. When you talk to people with different backgrounds and different perspectives, that's how you learn about life, and that's how you gain empathy. And our generation has a serious empathy problem.
They definitely, I think, do. I think because, okay, why do you think it is? Why do you think they have a serious empathy problem?
I think, so I don't want to get too political here, but obviously in America, you have red America, blue America, that you can pretty much, at the current state, you can divide it down the line, and both sides hate each other, absolutely hate each other. And especially in Gen Z, there's a lot of intolerance for anyone who believes differently. You know, if you're Red America and you meet someone, you know, who believes different, you're like, oh, you're a snowflake. If you're Blue America and you meet someone who believes different, you're a fascist. You're a bad person. That's not normal. That's not stuff that you need to be hearing when you're 19, 20 years old, because you're going to internalize that and you're going to be like, wait, what if I actually am a bad person? What if the things that I was taught to believe by my parents growing up makes me a bad person? What if that makes my parents bad people? None of that is true. I mean, and you struggle to like make friends. It's a very unwelcoming environment. I don't know if unwelcoming is a word, but it's a very cold environment.
Cold. Yes. I was just thinking of that same word, cold. Because yeah, you grow up in this type of world where everything's fast. Like even dating, it's fast. Everyone just goes online and it's online dating, and it's like fast food of like interaction, you know? So you're not really taking the time to make these connections or actually get to know people. So the first thing they hear about you, or they see a photo you post, they think, I already know who you are. I'm just going to move on. You know, you're that type of person. But the social interaction has gone so low, and it's so hard for young people. So not only are you challenged financially, are you challenged with trying to educate yourself, go to college and, you know, get a job or do what you can to survive, but then you're also alone doing it. You know, it's almost like this breakdown, and it's hard for young people, you know, and I wish there was more places like at my job. Like, I'm a hairdresser, so I actually talk to people all the time, and it can be therapeutic to talk to a lot of people. But that's why I think doing this podcast is right up my alley, and it's great for you, who you feel sometimes disconnected from the world around you. It makes you feel like you're part of something, and people that actually have feelings and care for one another and aren't having that same sort of society, like dysfunction in society that you're noticing. It just feels like, how do you feel noticing that? Like seeing that the people you're speaking to and the people you're getting to know is completely like different from your regular perception of the world?
Yeah, definitely different. And I think part of that stems from the fact that everyone is a little bit older than I am and more experienced with life. And so you're part of a different generation, right? And
yeah,
the older generations are a lot more empathetic. They're a lot more welcoming. They're a lot more open than Gen Z is. And the best part about it, I think, is just talking to a lot of Bitcoiners and noticing how happy they are. I've never met a Bitcoiner who wasn't happy, who wasn't healthy, who didn't spend time with their family and, you know, go outside, have great mental health. And I mean, it's just awesome. And that just goes to show that Bitcoin, yes, it's an alternate form of money. Yes, it's a community that talks about finances and economics, but it's a lifestyle. it's a mindset that you put yourself into. And a lot of people, they love to call Bitcoin something. They love to say that it's like escaping the fiat matrix, which I think is super funny. And it just really goes to show how much your quality of life improves. And I think even just being in the space and talking to people for about a month, I feel a lot happier. I feel a lot more secure about my future and meeting people. Sorry.
Yeah, you have hope. It's like this feeling that you maybe felt like you were missing before. Like you almost do that fight or flight response that you have going on in your body at all times, because you're thinking, how am I going to do this? How, you know, just even every time you check out at the grocery store, it makes you feel the same way. But then when you see this and you hear this, what you're, even if you're saving a little bit of money in Bitcoin, it's like, it's really just a protection for this debasement, and you actually have hope. And it's such an uplifting feel. And that's why people are so happy, because I think people do sometimes go through really rough times, which that's why I mentioned the, you know, when you see the downgrade in society and you see these, you know, these terrible situations going on around the world. But those are the types of things that people kind of go through once they have to start looking for that answer. So you kind of have to go through this period of time where you're trying to find an answer for a reason, because you're, you know, struggling. And then when you figure it out, you finally have this hope, you know? So I think that's why people are like, all right, I'm beyond that. I'm not going to stress about a lot of that stuff. But Bitcoiners, for the most part, I think have been through some stuff. You know, I think by the time you find Bitcoin, you've been through it. And even you, like knowing that you're so young and you think, well, you're only 19 and you've been through it, you're only 19. But you look at how much we've talked about your generations being tested. You know, you guys have, you know, right away, you finish high school. And, you know, I just remember when I was finishing high school, or when I finished high school and I started working, I was barely working part-time, you know, building up my clientele. I had not much work, you know, as it was really early in my career. And even the little bit of money I made, I used to go shopping, I used to spend money, I used to go out dinner, go out and have fun, you know. Yeah, I didn't have a lot of extra money to, you know, it was like, I felt like I was always struggling because that was early on. But when I started making more money, then I felt the same. I was like, it just feels kind of similar. There was a point where I felt like things were pretty good. And then it just started to go back down again. I'm like, wow, why are things so hard? But you guys come straight into the world where you should be enjoying your life, going out, hanging out with friends. And that's another thing that leads to your disconnect, I think, because before, if the fiat system wasn't broken and your dollars got you further, you'd be able to say, hey, I want to tell a group of friends to go out and meet and have dinner and enjoy each other's time out together. But what do you get? That's why that whole term Netflix and chill, it's like everyone just wants to get together and watch movies. What are you supposed to do when you have no money? You know, you can't go and enjoy life.
Exactly. And I mean, it's gotten to the point where a simple night out, a simple time where you want to get together with your friends and be like, let's just go outside, let's hit up dinner, let's hit up the bar, sets you back about like 90, 100 Australian dollars. And, you know, it's entry fees and price of liquor itself and all these surcharges that they add. So there's a lot of things that add up to it, but it's very, very expensive. And so the thing that my friends and I love to say is, why don't we just get together and enjoy our rent? So we'll just come and hang out at one of our places and call it, you know, enjoying our rent. Where
it's so true. I mean, you're paying so much for rent. And I think that in the past, you wouldn't have heard young people say that, you know, because they'd just be paying rent and like, let's get out. We're home too much. But you're thinking like, okay, I should be enjoying this place more. I pay so much for it. So you appreciate it more because you realize how much money you're spending on this place. And you're always trying to get out of it. But yeah, it's like you can buy the alcohol cheaper, hang out, you know, just get together at home. But then that also kind of reduces, even though it's a group of friends, and even though the bar scene isn't where people like to meet other people, but it's just kind of like that people used to go out and just, I don't know, interact with humans, you know, and it's like you just now it's just the people that you invited. And that's it, because you're not gonna, it's just a whole different world. It's crazy.
Exactly. And we watch sitcoms like Friends and How I Met Your Mother, where, you know, they have this third place where all of them go and they hang out and they meet a lot of people and have a great time. Third places don't exist anymore. And that's almost entirely due to the rise of social media. But just the fact that they don't exist, it stops us from meeting people. I am in a completely new city, in a completely new country. I've never been here before, but all of the people that I've met through my classes on campus, or they live in my apartment building. Right. Nothing else. Even, yeah, you know, like you go to the gym. Exactly. Yeah. But it's kind of like, you know, you go to the gym, you go to like Pilates class or whatever. You don't really meet new people because we're just not as social anymore.
Yeah.
And I mean, it sucks. It really sucks.
Yeah. And that's why when you think, oh, but you guys are young and you're finding Bitcoin, you guys are the ones that should find Bitcoin, because you realize right off the bat, right into adulthood, that life is harder than it should be. Like, it should be, you're young, you're having fun, you're watching these old sitcoms, like you mentioned, and that third place is such a, I mean, something that we don't think about. Like, you watch it and you probably think it's like watching a movie where they didn't have cell phones yet. You think, wow, look at that old school type of mentality. But we watch that and we remember those times. Now, I remember those times where we just go places and meet up with people. But thinking, that's why I love talking to people of a different generation and hearing you watching shows like that. To you, it's probably watching before, like when I watch old movies without phones. But what an interesting concept, you know, that you look at that and you think, wow, what kind of world is that? You know, and yes, partly because of technology, I agree. But also, if it wasn't for, even if we had technology, you know, but your dollar was sound and you had purchasing power that was not stolen from you, you'd be able to say, hey, let's just, I don't feel like, I want to go to this cool place. I want to have somebody serve me. I want to, you know what I mean? You just want to go somewhere new and go somewhere fun and try new things and meet up with your friends. And the dollar or fiat getting destroyed takes that from you, because you really, even if it wasn't for technology, or even if it was technology plus sound money, you would probably still go out, I think, and have a third place. That's crazy.
Yeah, and this is part of the reason why hustle culture is also so big. I have a lot of my friends that are doing these insane side hustles, and they're, you know, writing options like calls and puts and day trading like crazy, always monitoring the markets. And I bring it up to them like, hey, have you thought about Bitcoin? And they're like, no. Like, I'm looking for quick profits. That's the problem. That's exactly what the problem with Gen Z is. We are in a stage in our life where we will do anything for a quick buck, because we have to, because your quality of life is always dependent on the amount of money that you are able to spend. But for us, things are getting more and more expensive and our wages aren't keeping up.
Yeah, you're right about
really,
that.
Really, really unfair.
It is really unfair. And that's why I'm glad you even brought up that term hustle culture, because, you know, again, me, I'm 41 years old, but me, when I was your age, I knew people, everyone had one job, you know, it was that one job that you were doing and that was it. And it wasn't until kind of recently that you hear people doing these, you know, oh, I drive on the side for Uber, I deliver food for this, or I do, you know, but people are just trying to find ways to make extra money and get these side hustles. And that wasn't a thing before. People used to use that extra time to do things they wanted to do, or do things that were meaningful connections with other people. But now you're just trying to like find extra ways to make cash. And it's just become, I can't believe it's even like a thing, hustle culture. I never even really thought about it like that. But it does feel like, I mean, that's normal. That's normal to you guys. That's real life. And to us, we don't think like, that's why I can't stand when people try to call young people lazy. Because I'm like, when they used to work for money and they say, well, you just have to work harder and stop spending so much and save your money. They used to be able to save their money and it meant something. You know, they used to be able to go to one job to like, okay, here's one thing. Speaking of watching old things, old shows, you watch like, there's an old show called, what was it called? It was with Al Bundy. It was, Al Bundy, and it was called, it was like he was a shoe salesman. I can't remember. Why do I have a mind blank right now? You wouldn't know it. But but he had a family and they were kind of considered like lower class, and he used to work as a shoe salesman at a store, and his wife didn't work and he had two kids in high school and they weren't considered like wealthy, but they had a nice, decent sized house and his wife didn't work. And it's like, and then also you think about The Simpsons, where Homer Simpson was the only person working. They had a two-car garage house with three kids. and his wife didn't work, and he was able to, they weren't considered rich or anything, but these days that would be considered pretty wealthy if you're able to do that on one salary. And that was normal back then. So when you look at even TV shows like cartoons or sitcoms, that is impossible now. So when people say young generations are lazy, it's ridiculous because they don't understand that it's impossible to save money. I think I used to think that with my mom used to tell me that too. Like, you have to save more money. I'm like, how? Because then you have to start cutting back on things you like. At least that's how my life went. But I started cutting back on certain things, trying to save. But it's just, it's not fair. Like you said, it's not fair.
Exactly. And there is this emphasis on saving. And people are always like, well, just save a little bit more, a little bit more. Just keep increasing the amount that you save, you know, as your income increases, which is true. But so I'll give you an example. In Australia, when you come as an international student, you can open a student account with a bank. This account has no interest. No interest. So if I put $100 when I first came here, which was in early 2024, that's not worth $100 today. I'm not sure exactly what the inflation rate in Australia is, but I think it's somewhere between 2 to 3% for 2024. So you have the dollar, the Australian dollar, which is losing value, but your bank isn't giving that value back, which most banks would give you interest. You get nothing. So is there really a point to putting your money in a bank? Isn't it better to just hold it in cash?
The bank is the same thing as a couch, right? Or that's why they tell you, yeah, you have to invest it, you know, but investing is also, I think, just manipulated kind of world. But the crazy part is when they tell you that it's 2% inflation, but you notice your grocery bills have doubled. It's, I don't know if you've heard this stat yet from anybody, but it's not because, so they like to take whatever data they used to use in the inflation rate, and they like to remove stuff from that basket to make it seem like not as big of a problem.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So before, they used to measure the inflation rate based on home prices, food, energy, and those types of things were included in that data. And then as inflation gets worse, they remove the things that are the most necessary for survival. They take out food, energy, and like shelter. It's certain things they remove from the data. So it's like they're telling you it's this percent, but that's because they don't have the same metrics they used to use. There, anything that's costing too much, they take it out because it makes it look bad. So when you're seeing the numbers, it's because it's manipulated data and it's not the same metrics they used to measure with. Isn't that great?
Gosh.
So what, that's why when you think,
insane.
Yeah, so when you think 2%, it's supposed to be 2%, that's a normal level of theft that we're okay with. But it's, people say it's closer to probably 7 or 8%. It's really closer to 40% because most of your life is your shelter and your food and your energy, you know? So how much has your food gone up in the last 2 years compared to buying groceries?
I think when I first came here, the grocery bill was probably 85 Australian dollars. Now when I go, I pay about 90. Yeah. And I get all of the same stuff. Yeah, pretty much all of the same stuff. And then maybe, you know, I've added like one or two more like fruits or vegetables or something, but it's not something that should make it go up $12. So it's just the fact that these prices are increasing so rapidly and they'll charge us for anything. I mean, if you forget a bag, if you forget to bring a bag to the grocery store, here's you paying a dollar for another one.
Right. Right.
It's insane.
It's crazy. But just try to look that up. Like, that should be a metric that for people that are in, any of your friends that are in finance and you try to think about what inflation is, just that's a really good thing to remember about the data that's manipulated. And I even heard something that I think Natalie Burnell even told me this. She said it's in her book that's coming out called Bitcoin is for Everyone. She was saying that the shelter portion of that data, they used to they ask people who own homes what they would rent their house for. But you think that most people that own homes are not young people that own their home. They're older people. And they go around asking the older people that are like an older generation, what would you rent your house for? But they don't realize the price of inflation. So they tell you, oh, I'd rent my house for $1,500. But that's not what the rate is. It's way higher than that. But they just go around and do a survey of the people that don't realize how much they could get for rent these days. And that's the data they use because they ask people this question. So it's,
I wish my rent was $1,500.
I mean, that's what, but older people would say like, oh yeah, that's a good amount of money. I would rent that because they don't know that, because they couldn't even expect to say, oh, it'd be like $3,500 or $3,000. You know what I mean? They wouldn't know. But to them, they think, I guess maybe $2,000 at the most, you know, but it would be like double that or something. So, but that's what they take into account. It's nothing that's scientific or like, it doesn't have a basis on reality. It's just taking a survey from a group of people that they know is going to give you the wrong amount.
That's actually insane. I mean, there's got to be a law or something against that. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's manipulation. It's like literally so they just tell you this 2% number. And plus, did you hear recently that the Fed just gave up their fight on the 2%?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is a crazy thing, which that should be another alarm bell for young people to be thinking, because all this time that it keeps going up and up, now the Fed pretty much just, in the U.S. at least, the U.S. Federal Reserve admits that they pretty much are giving up their fight against inflation and they're not going to have a 2% number to stick to because they know it's literally impossible. Like that quote, nothing stops this train, you know, so they know they have to continue printing. So it's just, it's Bitcoin is your lifeboat. And I'm so glad you're teaching or trying to spread the word to young people and kind of like show people there's a way out of hustle culture, you know? And I wish you guys had a third place, you know, to go to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, a lot's about to change, I think, in the coming 20 years at least. And history is always run in 20-year cycles, and history does have a tendency to repeat itself. So what goes up has to come down. And I think we're doing the best we can as Bitcoiners to help build a better future for ourselves and for our kids. Yes. So, I mean, I think it's just a matter of sharing as much as you can.
Yes, that is so true. And that's why I have hope. I don't think about it like, I mean, I think if I didn't find out about Bitcoin, I'd be a lot more nervous about my kids' future. But just knowing that that you guys are here to experience this shift in the world is an incredible time to be part of. And I'm happy that my kids get to live in that world too, for whatever we're building, for whatever you're building, and whoever you're talking to and learning from. It's just so important that just kind of getting out of that, you know, that box that you think your mind is in, that you think that you know, this is the way the world is, you know, there is an escape for that. So I'm just so proud of you that you're able to do what you're doing. I'm glad you have free time. I'm glad you're not trying to hustle to the point where you can't do this podcast, you know, and you're too busy doing other side hustles. So it's really great that you're taking this valuable time that you have, that you could be trying to do something else to make a little extra cash, but I think you realize, like, do you think that instead of doing that, instead of picking up another side hustle, knowing about Bitcoin, do you feel that instead of spending your valuable time trying to find something else to do, is it helpful enough for you to just put any extra cash you have just into Bitcoin?
Yeah, I think so. What I've started to do this semester, especially, so since about July, is anything that I save, I want to put into Bitcoin completely. And I've been trying to, you know, work on my spending because I do think that our generation has a huge spending problem. But I grew up privileged enough that my parents were like, get the degree, work afterwards. Don't spend your time in a side hustle, in a day job, get the degree, put whatever time you have into studying and just, you know, living college and don't worry about it. So the amount of money that I get per month from them for, you know, just to cover expenses, whatever I can, I try to save and I put it into Bitcoin. And I mean, I'm very privileged to have grown up in that environment and to still be in that environment. And I'm very, very grateful. But it's also a big thing, I think, in my culture, in Indian culture, especially, they're always like, college is the time to study, to build your future life, not to focus on making money. So I recognize that a lot of Gen Z are in a very different place than I am. And I think for them, it's a lot harder to put aside money. And it's a lot harder to learn about Bitcoin. Because this takes hours and hours of study to really, really understand. And every single time where you feel like you know it, there's going to be a thing that you don't know. I mean, it's a gold mine of knowledge, right? There's always going to be more and more and more. And because of that, it feels daunting. So that's also part of the reason why I wanted to do Orange Peel, just because I wanted to simplify the process of learning as much as possible. And for it to be like, okay, I know you can't put in the 1,000 hours. I'll put in the 1,000 hours. You just put in two to watch the episodes every week.
That's amazing. Yeah, and they could do it while they're, you know, doing chores or doing something else. You know, they don't have to like stare at a screen. They could actually just take in the information from you finding out who the most, you know, the most brilliant minds are in the space and asking them to join you, and they will, you know, so you're able to get these answers for them and find out who to have on. And because you're right, that's such a great point. You have the ability and the freedom to do this because of the situation your family has put you in. And I love that you're grateful for that. And you see that it's a blessing. And that's why, yeah, some of your friends that are doing these, you know, trading or trying to do those, the trades on the side. And they're thinking, because they don't have the option to not do that hustle, and they have to, which takes up their time to learn Bitcoin. So that's why I love that you're doing this. I love that you're able to put in the time for them and just give them a podcast every week and spread the word that way. That's so amazing. So you definitely have to keep going around and telling people that you have a podcast so people can watch it. And just, I don't know, it's so hard, but you want to just tell everybody there's an answer to this problem, you know, you're going to start to be known as the girl, the Bitcoin girl, you know. I think at first people, when you first start something and start learning something, they think she's just getting in some kind of bandwagon, and, you know, maybe they don't really believe in what you're doing. But when you put in that work, that proof of work, and you keep doing what you're doing, and then as Bitcoin gains more attention, as the price keeps rising, and they see that you've believed in this thing for however long, like even if it's 6 months from now or a year, and you're still doing the podcast, you're going to start, people will start coming up to you, oh, now tell me about Bitcoin, or, oh, what was that thing that you, can I hear about your podcast again? I forgot what it was. So you're going to have just people like remembering to come up to you and ask you stuff. And it's like, the more time you put into it, the more, I don't want to say it's like for a recognition, but people will start asking you about it, and you'll feel like, oh, now they're starting to care, you know. And it just takes a little bit of time. So keep at it. And I'm, you know, so happy and excited to see where this takes you.
Thank you. I mean, that really, really means a lot. And I can only hope that I do become the Bitcoin girl and I am able to make a difference in people's lives. But I think even where I am right now, I'm just so grateful that I get to talk to people and I get to learn. And, you know, by extension, anyone who is watching my podcast gets to learn too. And that's the best part about being in this space.
Yes, it's so rewarding. I am so happy. Well, thank you so much for joining me today. And I'm so happy that you can experience this type of, you know, this type of rewarding feeling, you know, by doing what you're doing and spreading this positivity and this hope to other people. So keep it up, keep up the good work, and, you know, enjoy it. You have that passion. So it's obviously a lot of fun and it's energizing for you. So keep it up. And thank you again for joining me today.
Thank you for having me, Stacey. And I absolutely have to have you on Orange Peel sometime as well.
Yes, I would love to. I'd love to join you. Well, have a great day. Take care.
You too.
Thank you. Bye.